The Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you, as always, by everybody who supports patreon.com/JURY. We have had a tremendous outpouring ever since we started doing exclusive content for all patrons. Did you miss the memo? Well, allow me to fill you in. Not only do you get, for any level, the Friday Hype Train in podcast form, that is 3 solid hours of absolute insanity for free, but if you are at the $3 and up level, you will get 2 headline episodes of Politics, Politics, Politics on Monday and Friday. This is only the beginning, and we hope that you continue to support us. But now, let's begin the show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are here with the Justin Robert Young program. It is for May 30th, 2017. Oh, my God. We are only a month away, officially, from launching our Kickstarter for Action News, the card game from the folks who brought you the Contender. I am starting to panic. I think that's fairly safe to say. I'm starting to fall apart here. We got a new toy that I could do the Patreon reads now.
I can do the Patreon reads in different voices. I can do one as Kylo Ren. I can do
one as a very, very high voice, a high-pitched voice, and really whatever.
Whatever else we want. I'm super, super, super pumped about this. All right. Real quick, I do want to talk about the Patreon up top. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who has backed the Patreon either for the first time or adjusted their pledge over the last week. We have had an insane growth rate, and I really want to continue to do I want to continue to do stuff for you guys that makes it worth it, effectively. So, here's another perk. I was thinking about what I do a lot of podcasts. I don't know if y'all have picked up on this. I do. Whenever anybody finds out that I make money doing podcasts, I have to explain to them again exactly how many that I do. And they're like, oh, well, because everybody thinks that you just have one successful podcast. But no, I'm a middle class professional podcaster. I got to do 50,000 podcasts to pay the rent. So I got a wrestling one, I got a comedy one, I got a storytelling one, which is what this is, a political one, tech news, whatever, man. I am a mile wide and an inch deep, but I hope that inch is sufficient, if you catch my drift. But there still, despite the fact that I do 50,000 podcasts, periodically, I get people asking me, well, why don't you do a blank podcast? Why don't you do a sports podcast? Why don't you do, for a while, forever, it was wrestling, and then I started doing a wrestling one. So, here's what I want. Anybody, this will go out to patrons, and I want anybody to vote on it. If I were to do a one-off, and I want the topic that you guys want covered and the guests, I will try to book the guests. I will do a pilot version of whatever kind of podcast you would like me to do. So, whatever that is, go ahead and email me in, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. We'll do it, and then we'll put it up there on the Patreon. Thank you guys so much for supporting. So there we go. Yeah, we're already getting it. The Phil Kessel podcast, the Nugs cast, Christian music, puppet show, hobby train, celebrity podcast, podcast about rebuilding carburetors, a pilot podcast about pilots. We could just cover pilots. I will take any and all suggestions. We will decide on one as a unit, and then I will go ahead and do it. But in the meantime, just a tremendous reaction. Thank you guys so much for being a part of it, because it does mean the world to me. Okay, let's get into the show for this week. We got so much stuff that we want to get to. British Airways is having a meltdown. British Airways saw what was going on here in America and said, hey, hold my pint of lager. We've got a question about the ethics of when to go to a wedding from our own poor Sean. I got a story about the time that I was a regular at a Steak and Shake. And, of course, we have a story about South Koreans smuggling gold nuggets up their butts. And I kind of feel like there's no story that deserves to be talked about first, aside from this one. So let's just go right into it. 51 male and female South Koreans are arrested for smuggling 2 tons of gold nuggets worth 77 million pounds in their rectums and private parts. This is a story from the Daily Mail. Let's read this story. Dozens of South Koreans were arrested for smuggling gold in their private parts over a 2-year period, local media reports. The smugglers are said to have sneaked more than 2 tons of the precious metal worth around 77 million pounds since March 2015. Male smugglers hid as many as 6 gold bars weighing 200 grams in their rectums, while women stashed it in their vaginas. I mean, nobody double dipped for the ladies? Nobody. Yeah, it's a literal butt ton. It's a butt ton. At least 51 people, including several housewives, were arrested at Incheon International Airport early last month, the Korean Times reports. The value of gold confiscated by the police was the highest in a single smuggling case. Smuggling happened from March 25th, and the gold came from Tokyo and China's Yantai. Korea's gold price is reported to be higher than other countries because of the 15% tax imposed on the metal. Here's a quote from the Korean Customs Service. Gold smuggling is a business. People can easily make money because of the price gap. As our crackdown gets tougher, smugglers are also getting more sophisticated in hiding gold or other jewelry products that they would like to bring in. He went on to say that the KCS was preparing to launch a special task force to bring an end to illegal gold smuggling. I mean, I guess since apparently the smugglers have already taken advantage of the end, they want to really get to the bottom of it, right? You know? You know, because when it comes to gold smuggling in Korea, the truth is always in the middle. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, these smugglers were probably just number two at their job. There we go. I'm getting booed now in the live chat room. We are getting absolutely booed. These are butt people rich. I kind of wonder. Number one, email me justinrobertyoung@gmail.com if you have ever smuggled anything. I won't read your name, but if you've ever smuggled anything, specifically if it was in your body, please email me immediately. Create a new Gmail account and email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I have never smuggled anything, nor do I know anybody personally who has at least told me that they have smuggled something inside themselves. I've known a few people that have, like, taken money from one place to another and probably brought more money than they were allowed to without declaring it or something like that. But never anything inserted. You got to wonder, what's the going rate for that? Can we get the Gold Booty Hole podcast, please? Asked Father Junior. Man, it looks like there are some real feet shufflers here in the live in the Twitch chat. They are curiously quiet as far as there's got to be at least somebody who is watching me right now, either live or recorded or listening to me to the sound of my voice that has smuggled something inside their butt. There's got to be. Because I really don't know where else to go with this aside from the puns, except for the fact that it's an amazing story. And people will always exploit market inefficiencies. This is just the longest example of, like, hey, wait a minute. There's a price difference between China, Japan, and Korea when it comes to gold. Oh, I know what I'll do. Me and a bunch of friends will just start taking flights between China, Tokyo, and Seoul. And we'll just jam a bunch of nuggets. I mean, but they were saying that there were bars. There were like, bars up. As many as 6 gold bars hidden in a butt. That's a hell of a butt. I mean, that's like a TARDIS level butt. There is that is bigger on the inside. And you got to figure, this is something that is so easy to do that for every one that they catch, there's got to be a 80% of the trade that is not being busted. Because unless they caught somebody, I mean, because they busted a ring, which means that they found one guy and he ratted everybody out. Or they had high-level information from somebody else that this was happening, and they were tipped off to the fact that it, like, I guess my point is nobody had a gold bar fall out of their asshole while they were walking to the baggage claim. You know? Things were going swimmingly. Hey, go ahead and get to the Ramada, shit out these gold bricks, and then you can hit the metaphorical bricks right on back to China so you can load that ass up with another couple gold bars. Just do me a favor, pop a squat here in the Ramada bathroom, and then I'm going to go dive through your treasure haul as if I'm some sort of bizarre Scrooge McDuck character. Oh, I don't know why I found that story so funny. All right. Ninja Steve says, I bet you they shit a brick when they got caught. There we go. That was the joke. I was looking for that joke the entire time, and now that we found it, we can move on. Poor Sean, who is a character who has talked about his he's downed a lot. You know, poor Sean is kind of a double two-sided coin. Number one, he is financially poor. He wound up going to cooking school and putting himself in just tremendous, suffocating debt. And now has to live under the yoke of those interest rates. And is understandably down about it. So he's always, you know, he's a guy who at this point right now just can't help but see the glass half empty side of life. So he writes it. What is the proper etiquette when your budget is super tight, but a family member is getting married and is pressuring you to be there, even though it will cost more than 1 month's pay to go? Do you burn down the familial bridge or do you go face ruin to do your duty to a sibling? Well, first and foremost, FritzX007 asks poor Sean, have you considered gold smuggling? Because apparently, not only can you see such exotic locales as Japan, China, and Korea, but you can also make a hefty sum of money. In fact, really, all the skills you need, you already have. The secret was inside you the entire time. All right. So let's get into this, because I do have a take. I got a hot take on this. It is my opinion that you should try to go to as many of your family weddings as possible, especially in your, like, immediate family, brother, sister, you know, if your mom gets remarried or something like that. These are very important times to go. Now, I would make the argument that over a long enough timeline, strong relationships with your family are more financially valuable than whatever that 1 month salary would cost, right? That you can always refigure your budget or put it on a credit card and pay that off over time to maintain these healthy familial relations. I think it is a better thing for your overall balance sheet. Now, I am not saying this as somebody for whom, aside from raising me, obviously, I have very rarely just gotten money from my brother or my mother, who are primarily my family. The idea isn't necessarily that you are going to get physical cash from them, but having people that are your advocates that can connect you to other people often can get you jobs. They can make you do your job better. They can bolster your reputation. They can get you a recommendation. Stuff like that. I think that there is a monetary value to that, and it is worth putting the time and effort in to go to these weddings. Now, the thing that sucks about this is that ultimately, you're going to go to somebody's wedding and then not see them at all. You're going to see them for 5 seconds. There might be like one of those like nights before the wedding where everybody kind of gets together. You'll see them for 5 seconds there. You'll see them for 11 seconds during the wedding when everybody's running around like a chicken with their head cut off. Oddly enough, you are going to somebody's wedding so you can network with other people that are not the person that you're going to the wedding for. So I'm going to spend more time with my mom if I'm going to my brother's wedding. I'm going to spend more time with my brother if I'm going to my mom's wedding. And yet, as everybody gets older in life, especially if you don't live near your family, you could probably fill a Subway punch card with the amount of times you are earning or renewing your bond with them. It'll always be there. But if you want a passionate, you know, they're in the forefront of my mind. Oh, I remember my brother actually is involved in this. Let me send him a text message or an email. There's really only so many times that you can put that in the forefront of your family's mind. These are important to me, but that's me. I would suggest that poor Sean put together the money. It's going to be painful. And if you need a little scratch, then I would say you go to your family and say, look, I really would like to do it. Is there any way that somebody could spot me for gas? Let me stay in your hotel. You know, just try to make it work. Put the effort in. And also, here's the other thing. Even if you're not going to go, if you know in your heart of hearts it's just not going to work, the idea that you are trying to make it work, I think does mean something. That also binds you to people. I'm kind of a sucker for weddings, though. I really like going to weddings. I think that they're fun. I like dressing up, you know. I like being around people. I like being around my friends. I like meeting new people. I'm always great with parents, too. I think I'm a good hang with the parents. I always like getting drunk with grandma. Getting drunk with grandma is a great time. If you just like all of a sudden start peer pressuring an octogenarian to take shots. That's the kind of behavior that you really only get at a wedding. That's the only place where it's socially acceptable to call somebody else's grandma a pussy because she won't take a shot of Jack Daniels. You know? That's what you want to do. TVZ God in the Twitch chat says, binds you to people like the Nazgul were bonded to Sauron? Yeah, effectively. Effectively. Speaking of Sauron, this has been a very, 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 very bad summer, year, 2017, for airlines. I have noticed more airline-related stories and hatred in my feed than ever before. We had the dude getting straight drug off the plane for United. We've had people getting kicked off, just general terrible behavior. Somebody on Southwest was like threatening to fight a passenger. Like is it just me or does it seem like there is just something's happening? We're having a moment as a culture where we are wondering aloud what the role of the airline is in our lives and whether or not we like it or we don't like it. I was listening to the Dan Le Batard podcast, which I love, one of my favorites. And they went off on just airlines in general, which, sure, like, airlines kind of suck. But ultimately, you can complain about the seating. You can complain about the fact that you got to pay for everything now. You can complain about the lack of overhead space or underhead space. You can complain about the division between first class and coach. You can complain about how tiny the bathrooms are. You can complain about the lack of consistency in the pricing for the Wi-Fi. But here's the thing that you can't complain about. You absolutely cannot complain about this when it comes to airlines. The fact that they get you from one point to the other in a manner faster than every other mode of transportation. They're pretty much the kings of getting you from one place to another. If you're going to ultimately look through the gigantic menu of options. Okay, I need to get from San Francisco to Chicago. Okay, well, I can take a train. It's going to cost this amount of money. It's going to take me 3 days. Well, I don't know if I really have 3 days. I kind of got to get there by tomorrow. Well, you can drive. But that's probably going to take you about a day and a half if you don't sleep. Oh, all right. Well, that's really not all that good. You could walk. That'll probably take you close to a couple months. Hitchhike, you know, that'll be like driving, except you might get murdered. Well, what about flying? You wouldn't want to fly. Why? Well, oh, wait, hold on. I can just do voices for this. Hold on, wait a minute.
No, you definitely wouldn't. You wouldn't want to fly.
Why wouldn't I want to fly?
because there's really, really, really a small amount of foot space.
Oh, geez, that is a problem, because I'm probably going to be like, to go from Chicago to San Francisco, you know, I'm probably going to be there for like, you know, 10 hours, 12 hours.
No. No, it's shorter.
Wait, really? So it's less than half the time that it would take for me to get there by other modes of transportation?
Yeah. About, it's probably about like two and a half hours.
The what now?
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours from one place to another? I mean, sure, I would like to have more foot room. I'd like to have a roomier bathroom. I'd like to have food brought to me that is something other than peanuts. I would like to have
But wait a minute. There's something that you don't know.
What's that?
The Wi-Fi?
It's
not accurately priced. In fact, you could get on one plane and it's $8 an hour, but on another plane, it's $5 or $12. You never know what it's going to cost.
You mean it also has Wi-Fi? Oh my God. So there's a lot of hate. A lot of hate for airlines. And now, after the American Airlines, although not American Airlines, oddly enough, but the airlines that are based in America have already just embarrassed themselves with a series of viral videos, there comes a lone voice from across the pond, whereas we think that we have totally acted the fool. It is British Airways that says, "Hey, mate, hold my lager." Here's the commentary from CNBC. British Airways: computer chaos threatens the brand of the world's favorite airline. Here we go. British Airways enjoyed record operating profits in 2016 thanks to increased passenger numbers, low fuel prices, and the post-Brexit referendum collapse of the sterling. But from a cost perspective, the airline's greatest single line item, apart from aviation fuel, remained its staff, accounting for roughly a quarter of total operating expenditures. So nobody should be surprised that the company sought to improve its margins by reducing headcount, or as the airline euphemistically describes it, embarking on, quote, a series of transformational proposals to develop a more efficient and cost-effective structure. But as the chaos of the last few days has shown, BA's decision to spend £124 million on severance packages for hundreds of staff last year seems a lot, at least in the short term, to have been money well spent. An ever-increasing number of the firm's IT systems have been subcontracted out to third-party companies, many of them overseas, a move that has prompted airline employees' unions, the GMB, to blame this weekend's computer outage and subsequent PR debacle on BA's decision to axe and outsource British IT jobs. Well, how bad could it be, you ask yourself? How bad could some computer systems going down be for British Airways? Well, apparently it was so bad that they had to completely abandon anything that had a computer screen. They literally had a dude out at the terminal with a whiteboard that would just get radioed back and forth, like, yeah, the 1205 to Portugal has left. Let's go ahead and write in the 706 to Miami. They totally went down. It was a absolute cluster F. Which, I mean, I don't know what's going on. Like, have we just entered in? Can somebody also, somebody try to find me a shot of their whiteboard? Just search British Airways whiteboard so you guys can get a gander at this whole thing. I am fascinated with why things in our common cultural zeitgeist tend to stick and why they go away. Why some things are a story for a day and some things are a story forever. And I got a theory. Let me spit this theory here at you. I believe that it is a sign of economic prosperity that we bitch about airlines. I think it is a sign that we have... Jesus. Look at some of these pictures here. Here are the lines at Heathrow Airport. These are all the luggage that could not be boarded on appropriate flights. For those of you listening, I will put this link in our show notes. But, oh my God, it is stretched as far as the eye can see. Apparently, some passengers had to leave their checked luggage at Heathrow Airport. So BA would, I guess, have to... like, just find your luggage would eventually find you somewhere. So it's like, you can get to Miami on time, but your luggage, nah, not so much. We'll find you. Don't worry. We'll catch you at the pool. And here we go. Here's the whiteboard. Oh, this poor lady. There's just this poor lady. She's got her back, she's writing on the whiteboard, and literally everybody else is just staring daggers at her. Everybody else is just like, when's my flight taking off? I need to know right now. Oh, Captain Funder makes the point that British schools have been off this week, so this is many family vacations ruined for the Britos. Ugh. Now, this is obviously, to me, this story is way bigger than the guy getting dragged off the plane. Because that actually shows if what this CNBC guy is saying is true, and they slashed their IT budget, and then within 6 months they had a massive failure, that is a from the top operational breakdown. That's a problem, right? You can directly trace that back to the top. Whereas with the United thing, it's a border, it's a gate agent not being able to solve the problem and things getting messy. Like it's a different situation. But I don't know. Do you guys have, I don't know if anybody else has any theories. I really have nothing else to say on this. Except for the fact that, like, it is interesting. I do in general think that we have it goes in ebbs and flows. And I have found this as somebody who talks about flying a fair amount, especially when I used to travel a lot more. It is an alienating subject. Because if you are talking about this publicly, I can almost guarantee you that most people who are listening to you, they have never been on a plane and probably will never. And so if everybody else is talking about, I'd have this beaten into me as soon as whenever I would talk about, oh my God, this airport and this United Lounge, I would just get a million hashtag WPRs. Father Junior in the Twitch chat says, if they just punched a guy, they would only be in trouble for assault instead of systematic business failure. I guess my point is to say that if one person punches somebody, then it's the same thing if they punch them working at a Carl's Jr. or a Pizza Hut or an Apple store or an airport. It's a person who lost control and physically assaulted somebody. That's about the people. That's about the person who punched and the person who got punched. Whereas, like, I don't know how much. To me, I guess here's what I'm saying. It's harder for me to say this company's culture is so rotten that it has perverted this person into somebody who would commit assault on somebody else. Rather than, to me, the direct evidence of failure by saying, yeah, we don't so much need all these computer guys, and then 6 months later, all their computers screw up during one of their busiest months or, you know, busiest weeks of the year. That's my point. And I don't know. Maybe it is just a coincidence that everybody is talking about airlines now. Maybe it is. But I'm kind of fascinated that we're at this point. We have a ton of emails, and a few of them are very, very passionate ones about people defending their choice of burger. We talked about Five Guys Burgers and Fries versus In-N-Out Burger yesterday. But Leon wrote in and asked this. In the last episode, you said Five Guys is coming to California like the White Walkers. Well, they're already here, and they have just as many locations in the Bay Area as In-N-Out. As a lifelong California resident, I take Five Guys over In-N-Out every single time. In-N-Out fries are terrible, and their burgers are just okay. P.S., have you had any experience with Steak and Shake? There's one opening soon in the South Bay, and I don't know if I should get excited. All right. So I do have experience with Steak and Shake, and it is a fairly funny experience. For those of you who saw my one-man performance at Nerdtacular 2 years ago, you heard a story of when I used to live with a bunch of my friends in Orlando. This is in that time period. Normally, because I was sleeping, so just a quick recap, I was supposed to sleep in a friend of mine's room of an apartment that had five rooms. And the goal, the hope, was that my one friend was going to stay and finish summer courses in Tallahassee at Florida State University. I would be able to sleep in his room while he was not there. And then periodically on weekends, he would come down and, you know, I would sleep on the couch. So one of those weekends was right at the very beginning. He comes down. We have a great weekend partying. And he's like, you want to know what? I'm not going to do my classes. I'm going to stay down here and party all summer. And I'm like, great. Also, that means I sleep on a couch now for the entire summer. In practicality, this meant that I was very often the last person up. Because you can't exactly sleep on a couch where everybody's currently hanging out. This often led to the fact that at the end of nights where there was copious alcohol and some medicinal being medicined, I would talk with my buddy Mike Rio, and we would decide almost routinely every night that we would go to Steak and Shake, which is right around the corner. I assume it's still open. It's the Steak and Shake right by the University of Central Florida campus. Steak and Shake has two happy hours. One from, I believe, 2 to 5 in the afternoon and 2 to 5 in the morning. We became happy hour regulars. It was a fantastic relationship between us and the night crew of this one specific Steak and Shake. We'd show up. We were loud, very loud. And I can remember few things. I had to text my buddy, Mike, and ask him. Here's what I texted him yesterday. I said, Mike, do you remember anything? Do you remember any fun stories from when we used to go to Steak and Shake trashed at 3 a.m. every day? He goes, no. I was a little fuzzy. But there was a waitress. We wound up having a waitress. And she was either in high school or a mother of three or both. I don't know which, but I know at least one of those three things are true. That she was either in high school, working a very weird summer job, or she had three kids. And it's Central Florida, so come on. You can never rule out the little gray area of that Venn diagram. But I have never gotten food served faster. Never gotten food served faster. Because they wanted us to get the hell out of there. As like any time that we were still in the Steak and Shake was a moment that something could go wrong. So at the second that we walked in, they had memorized our orders because the orders were almost exactly the same. And they would just be like, the same, yup, map, map, map. Only, you know, nobody else is there. They'd fire everything up. It was breakfast food, so it would usually go pretty quick. Boom, they feed us, they get out of there. But a funny thing happened after you show up to the same Steak and Shake over and over and over again, completely trashed every day at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And that is eventually we grew a bit of rapport with them. But we didn't grow rapport with us. Like if we had run into them sober, I don't know if we'd know what to say. But drunk, them being sober and us drunk, oh, it was just, you know, we'd walk in. We thought we were being very charming. We thought that we would be cracking jokes and trying to, like, make fun comments. I'm sure we were just absolutely slurball obnoxious. But the one thing that did happen is they eventually became our Supreme Court. So if there was ever anything, a hypothetical that had started an argument, some kind of judgment on one's character, eventually we would just bring it to the oracles. Specifically the waitress that was either in high school or a mother of three or both. Lon makes says, that's quite the accomplishment, being unsavory at Steak and Shake. So yeah, we went there. I wish I had better stories of it, but I will say this. Steak and Shake, pretty rad. It's about as cheap as you can get for sit-down food, but not specifically fast if you get it in the drive-thru. Burgers are good. Usually go with the double. I'm not a huge fan of the chili five-way, but they do it. Some people really love it. So go ahead and check it out. Let's get into the rest of these emails. We will continue with the burgers. Again, JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. The emails are brought to you by stickers or diaf.com. That is where you can get Diamond Club stickers, and you can sign up for our mailing list, bit.ly/stickers or diaf. That is all lowercase. And every week, a new subscriber to the mailing list gets free stickers. This week's winner is Tyler. Thank you so much. Go ahead and get back to me on your address, and you will have free stickers on the way. Let's go ahead and check out our Burger War emails. Frozen Summers writes, now I have nothing to add on what burger is better since I'm in Australia and I've never had a Five Guys or In-N-Out or Wendy's. Wait, they don't have Wendy's in Australia? What the fuck? That's a huge oversight. Summers goes on, but In-N-Out has done a series of one-day pop-ups in Sydney to gauge the worthiness of expansion to Australia. We're talking iPhone-level queues just for the possibility of getting a burger. In related news, Carl's Jr. has recently opened two stores in Australia. Not that any of this matters because I'm a vegetarian now and we already have Lord of the Fries. No idea what that is. Alexander writes, face it, In-N-Out has a mediocre quality, vastly overhyped burger. Five Guys has a disgustingly delicious build-it-yourself greaseball from heaven. In-N-Out deserves to lose the title for no other reason than their pathetic excuse for fries. He then goes on to say, ketchup on a hot dog, you vile heretic. Love the show, though, and thanks for introducing me to Dan Carlin by way of your election night stream. Listen, I'm tired of these hot dog elitists. Yeah, I put ketchup on my hot dog. You want to know what? I'm goddamn proud of it. I like the way the ketchup tastes on my hot dog. Oh, my God. These mustard purists. Only mustard should go on a... Whatever. Shut up. I guess I really didn't do a great job at shutting them down. I didn't really have any comebacks. I just like it. I don't know. Well, you're a child if you put ketchup on your hot... Then fine. And then here we go.
Yeah, it's me. I'm a child. I love hot dogs with ketchup on it. I like to cut them up. I like to eat them. I like to smear them all over my face, and then I throw them on the floor, and then I try to eat them off the floor. I'm me. I'm a child. Yeah, look at me.
Whatever. All right. Scale. Writing about our question of whether or not dragons are for white kids. Scale writes, I went and read the article by Ruiz. The guy didn't sound like a person of color being oppressed. He sounded like a shitty DM. In fact, he sounded more like the Sun Hat lady, claiming some ridiculous racial bias when in reality they were just being obnoxious. So his players didn't want to learn Spanish for a game of D&D. That's not indicative of them fearing a Spanish takeover. They'd have the same reaction if you arrogantly expected them to learn French or German. The whole point of the game is that it's an escape from reality. Furthermore, all the examples he gave of this whiteness in nerd culture were from racist reaction to Hispanics. The no speak of the taco conversation was a Hispanic talking to a Hispanic, as were his friends who thought he was being too white or forgetting where he came from. Ruiz, that's on you, brother, not us. Then, as if to have the icing on the cake, he says that events like BlenderCon are progress. Motherfucker is advocating for segregation and thinks that process. Goddamn. Nerd culture is and has been and always will be the most racially open subculture. We've got games and movies and shows and stories from all over the world. This butthurt motherfucker needs to lighten the hell up. Well, as far as lightening the hell up goes, Scale, I think one doth protest too much. Because you seem a little ratcheted up about it. But I will say this. I disagree. I think that there is racial animus in the geek subculture. I think that there is sexist, misogynistic animus in the geek subculture. I think that a lot of this comes from the fact that geek culture is one that values persecution. The triumph of the geek is the subjugation of the nerd, right? Or sorry, subjugation of the jock. The idea that, you know, there's the dismissive attitude towards sports comes from the fact that sports was an oppressive monoculture when you were growing up and you felt ostracized, so now we feel the need to ostracize others. I'm not going to pretend to know that this is a good thing. In fact, I think it's a bad thing or that it's fixable. I'm just saying that it does exist in my mind. I mean, it kind of reminds me, I don't know if we should even bring this up. Why should we... Should we bring up the Wonder Woman screenings? I mean, we're almost at the end of the show. We're at 50 minutes. Should I bring up the Wonder Woman screenings? Do you guys want my hot take about the Wonder Woman screenings? For those of you who don't know, the Alamo Drafthouse is holding, I believe this week, because it's when the movie comes out, women-only screenings of Wonder Woman. Now, I don't quite know how they're going to enforce it, but the idea of it was controversial. I tend to think that the controversy was a little overblown. I think that there are some people on the Alamo Drafthouse Facebook page that are upset by it, and they said shitty things. But I don't know if that means that the wider culture is upset about it. I do know that there is one person, one party in this, rather, that has a vested interest in this being portrayed as big of a culture war as possible. And I don't blame them for doing it. Because if you have bought a ticket or been upset and registered your disgust online, if you are a blogger who wrote a piece about this specific story on one side or another, then allow me to let you know you're getting worked, bro. It's a work. This is pro wrestling. The only people that benefit here are the Alamo Drafthouse, which I don't know if y'all have figured out, but being in the movie theater business these days is a dicey proposition. Less and less people are going to the movies. Any way that you can fill theaters, that you can put an ass every 18 inches, you want to do it. This is a publicity stunt. And I'm not demeaning it for women who do think that it's an awesome, important thing. Great. You're servicing a very specific demographic by doing something that I can almost guarantee they knew was going to get blowback. So they knew they were going to have a lit-ass Facebook and Twitter feed. And they made sure they let everybody know that somebody was in there saying dirty stuff, which meant more people wanted to support it because this was a cultural touchstone. I'm bravo to the New York City Alamo Drafthouse for doing this, just because I appreciate people using pro wrestling for what they're supposed to, selling tickets. That's it. That's my thought. Yeah, kayfabe, bro. Come on. Yeah, Reed Was says, how many people even live by an Alamo Draft House? I don't know. Probably not a lot. All right. Let's get into our Christian music. Man, we're still getting emails about Christian music. And by the way, I appreciate everybody sending me playlists and big lists of YouTube videos and everything. I think I've hit the end of my research phase when it comes to Christian music. I think I've listened to enough Christian music. Evan writes, I believe that you've been led astray from what Christian music can be. Oh, this is a great email. Gregorian chants are not only the original Christian music, but also the best, with only one notable exception, which I will return to in a second. The sort of Protestant feel-good pop and rock is bland and detached compared to, say, Ubi Caritas and whatnot, and is genuinely and technically thematically inferior. This dude is going super hipster with his Christian music. Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, I guess some of these devotionals are pretty good, but, you know, I preferred Christian music when it was a Gregorian chant. This is the best. This is the best ever. He goes on. This comes from a Catholic guy about to graduate high school, so take my opinion with a grain of salt. But when you remove the classical elements and modernize Christian music, you take all the bite out of it and everything is watered down. I'm trying to get... some of this music here. This Ubi Carinus. Oh, man. I'll tell you, we're going to have to move on. By the way, how baller is it that this kid's in high school? Evan, you are the emailer of the week. Congratulations. He goes on to write, as a general rule, the more Latin there is, the older the tune and the lyrics, and the better the song goes. This is just so amazing. So amazing. I gotta try to find. Here we go. We now have Ubi Caritas by the Cambridge Singers. Uh-oh. Yeah. Now that's some Christian music. Lon Meg says, I didn't get into Gregorian chants until college. This kid rocks. Come on, everybody. Everybody's like, oh, well, listen to POD. Listen to Jars of Clay. Uh-uh. I'm here for one part of Christian music and one part of Christian music only. Gregorian chants. Up yours with a bar of gold, Amy Grant. I got some Gregorian chants for that ass. Noisemaker Joe writes, I've got a Christian music past that might be a little different from what you've played on the show thus far. As a kid, I grew up with parents who some would call conservative, but I would call protective. So when a 13-year-old Joe decided he was going to find music to listen to beyond Weird Al or my dad's Genesis or Pink Floyd CDs, a lot of it got the kibosh based solely on the genre. Rap? Uh-uh. Metal? Absolutely not. Punk? You must be joking. But when I found Christian bands with those musical sounds, the rapper T-Bone, the rap metal punk bands Thousand Foot Crunch and POD, and the straight up hardcore metal bands like Haste the Day and Demon Hunter, I could always say, but Mom, they're Christian bands. And I was able to get the okay and buy their CDs. I grew up Catholic, and while it was never the most important part of my life, it was part of my identity during that time, so the subject matter neither spoke to me nor seemed out of place. It was just a way that I could hear rapping or growled vocals without having to hide it from my parents. I owe a lot of my eclectic music taste to various Christian bands and Weird Al, but that's a different story. Citrus Notes writes, I think we can draw a parallel. This is about the guy who had the Manchester tweet. I think we can draw a parallel between the bad Twitter joke guy and the Manchester attacker himself. Citrus Notes went on to write a whole other email that I'm not going to read, not because it was bad, but because I want us to all learn a lesson that sometimes just because you can make a point doesn't mean you should make a point. I am guilty of this a million times out of a million times, and I'm happy to pass that lesson on. And finally, Derek from Eugene writes, I wanted to give my take on the Twitter douchebag and the response there. My feeling is that comedy should not have any limits. Moreover, it's important that free speech not have any limits, short of the proverbial yelling a fire in a crowded theater. Comedy is a release valve, a means by making subversive ideas palatable. And yet an important tool is nonviolent dissent. That freedom needs a check, and this sort of backlash is that check. The line in the sand needs to be redrawn sometimes. I think that's a fair way to say, hey, listen, balls out free speech, should be allowed to say it, but hey, sometimes what you say should have social consequences. You don't necessarily need to have anything banned, right? We're taking care of it just fine. You said something dumb, you got dragged on Twitter. We can quibble about how and why and how much you want to get that message out, but that seems like something that we can all agree on. All right, that about wraps it up for this edition of the Justin Robert Young podcast. Thank you again to everybody who has supported us on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/JURY. Again, exclusive content for all patrons. Now a thing. If you want free Diamond Club stickers, go ahead and sign up for our mailing list at bit.ly/stickers or DIAF. Thank you to the Spinto Band and Possum Posse for our song. You can email me at justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Just make sure you put jury in the subject line. Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat is Justin R. Young, and you can hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. Ladies and gentlemen, if you find yourself with gold up your ass, if you find yourself at a Steak and Shake at 3 a.m., if you find yourself writing on a whiteboard at Heathrow Airport as you're on your way to see your family get married despite the fact that you ain't got the money, I want you to remind yourself that my name is Justin Robert Young, and I want all of you guys to please
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.